Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. My name's Rich Spate and I'm joined down the line from Australia by none other than Martin Wanless. How are you this afternoon, this evening it is for you, Martin?
It is this evening, Rich. No, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Great, yeah, tired, coffeed up. Not sure I'm going to be coherent, but I'll just let yous talk. And talking of people who can talk for England, we're also joined from Bolden by Gav Henderson. How are you this morning, mate?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, very good, very good. Ready to talk about Sunderland. I've been a bit bored the last few days with no football, so this is a welcome addition to my morning. So, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. It's been a strange one, isn't it? So, I've had three games over Christmas. Not as busy as it would have been or could have been. Should have had Fleetwood, but obviously that's off with COVID in their ranks. But we have had three games. 5-1 defeat away at Arsenal. We've had a 3-0 win away at Doncaster, which I know you were at, Gav, and you thoroughly enjoyed. And a 5-0 home victory against Sheffield Wednesday, which we talked about earlier in the week. Martin, how do you see the Christmas period overall? I guess the general level of performance and where you think it leaves us as a club?
I think we've had a really strong Christmas. And I think, you know, if we all sat here at the start of December, which we did, if you look, go back and listen to the podcast that we did a month or so ago, and what we kind of thought and hoped would pan out over the next 4 or 5 weeks, it's kind of followed what we hoped would happen. Performances have been good, results have been good. And to do it with the amount of injuries that we've had and the amount of sort of upheaval in the squad, I think it's been fantastic. And like, you know, it's not that long ago since we got knocked out of the cup by Mansfield, didn't we? And the whole Johnson out sort of thing started to pick up a little bit of, you know, a little bit of traction on social media with a vocal minority. And we since that Ipswich at home game, we've done absolutely superbly well, so it all augurs well for a good 2022, I think.
Certainly, and I think that the point you make about like how we've dealt with injuries, I think is actually probably the key theme of this period. You know, dealing with only having 13, 14 first-team players available, depending on how you define that. But they've done really well, haven't they, Gavin? And they've come through almost looking stronger than at the beginning of December as we go into January now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's to do with the smaller squad. I know when we had Nick Barnes on the other week, he mentioned that he'd heard Lee Johnson likes a smaller squad. You can certainly see why, because he's able to galvanise them in a way maybe he isn't able to with a bigger squad. But regardless, I think you've just got to give him and the coaching staff and the players the utmost credit, because it was a difficult period to go into. I mean, I know a lot of teams, especially in the last few weeks with COVID, have been hit pretty hard in terms of squad numbers, but we've done it and haven't complained about it. Like a lot of clubs and a lot of managers have came out, not just in League One, but in the Premier League, and have complained about how they've got hardly any players available and really kicked up a stink about it. Sunderland were struggling for numbers, 2 months ago? We've not really had that many options in the last few months to call upon, yet we've just gone about our business. We rode through a sticky period and we've came out of it at the other end with, you know, some fantastic results, fantastic performances, good league position. I mean, if had we played Fleetwood, could well be top of the league, I would have thought we would be top of the league because we would beat them the way we're playing at the minute. So, you know, you can't complain, really. I think this is as good as it possibly gets. I mean, yeah, I mean, just before that Arsenal game, we probably could have got more from Ipswich. We didn't have a very good first half, but had a really strong second half. The Oxford game, yeah, we maybe could have won that. But, I mean, you're going to have games like that. And that's really what people have to remember. We are going to draw games. We are going to lose games between now and the end of the season because we're only halfway through. But other than that, really, you've just got to look at December and think, what a fantastic month it's been for us. I think we're 8 unbeaten in the league now. I know we got the scoreline would suggest that we got battered by Arsenal in the cup, but we came out of that game with so much praise, not just from Sunderland fans, mm-hmm. but from fans of all clubs. I don't really think December could have gone much better to set us up for a strong January. And I think when you look at what we're trying to do in January, and I know we're going to come on to transfers and stuff, but those performances, particularly on TV, the Doncaster and Arsenal games, there were a couple of players in the stands at the Chef Wed game watching us. That's a fantastic sort of advert for the club, how we play, what the atmosphere is currently like around the team. And I just think we're in a really good place. I can't complain. I think anybody who has any qualms about the way things are going right now is, I don't know. I wouldn't understand anybody complaining about the way things are, because we have been top notch. And Lee Johnson, like I say, deserves so much credit for turning things around after that sticky patch he had at the end of October.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've been most impressed by is like how we've kind of stuck with, I know what, you know, people don't like the way he talks, but the philosophy that Johnson talks about, and how this small group of players is really playing that philosophy, and it does actually work. And they've added a little bit of steel to it as well, and a little bit more competitiveness in the middle of the park. Obviously, Pritchard's been kind of key to that, hasn't he, Martin? And the overall style of play, when we look back over, the course of the year and where we were a year ago, it's like night and day, isn't it? Just in terms of the way we play football, it's much more attractive.
Well, it's a joy to watch. You know, the Sheffield Wednesday game, the Doncaster game, you sat there all day and watched us knock the ball around. We were, you know, playing with confidence. We were playing with style. We've got players who you want to see get the ball and use the ball well. And even in the Sheffield Wednesday game, like Elliot Embleton, who hasn't had a great deal of luck in, he had a, you know, good start of the season, but he's been on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. I think since that Gillingham game, where he got a red card, didn't he? He's been sitting on the bench on the periphery of things. Even he's such a talented player, and you want him to get the ball because he's got such good close control and create something. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's having to get the ball when he can because Pritchard's so good on the ball and Ross Stewart's so good on the ball and all these players that we've got. And you know, they are fantastically good to watch. But you know, going back to what you said at the start of that question, Rich, in terms of the philosophy of the club and how we're playing and the playing style, I think it's such an important thing that Lee Johnson wrote out that sticky spell, as Gav put it, because it just re-emphasises the players that overall the club has a strong belief in that philosophy. It's not weasel words that'll get thrown out the minute something bad goes mm-hmm. or something bad happens or something goes wrong. It's actually a philosophy that can be believed in. And I think the fact that we've ridden out that bad spell gives the players confidence to buy in even further into what Lee Johnson's doing. And I think it was either Ross Stewart or Alex Pritchard in an interview either after the Doncaster game or Chef Wed game made the point that the players are really enjoying playing football. The players are really enjoying playing for the club. And I think that's such an important element mm-hmm. that, you know, they've got confidence, they've got trust that it's not going to be upturned overnight if we get a bad result or we go on a little run of not so good results. That this is a long-term thing. And I think that also gives a lot of confidence prospective signings coming in that this isn't a club that's going to be turned upside down in 3 months. Mm-hmm. It's something that they can buy into. And I think all of that coming together, we're seeing the results on the pitch, which, as you say, it's great to watch.
Yeah, certainly, as Gav said, you know, if you've got players sitting in the stands, people, you know, looking at where they might want to make their move or managers looking at where they might want to let their young prospects go and develop, it's a place where you can come, you can play football, you can really develop your game and you can really make the most of playing a style of player that is attractive and fun. And I think that element, yeah, it's something that can't be kind of understated, the enjoyment that players want to get out of the game.
A big thing. That's a big thing in the modern game as well. When you think sort of this generation of footballer now, they've all pretty much came through an academy system. So they're very much used to that professional upbringing, working in professional facilities, being coached in a modern way. It's that sort of, even in League One now, the majority of players have came through an academy. So that generation before them, a lot of them might have came through non-league or at clubs where they didn't really have a solid academy set up. So when you're, say, like, look, Alex Pritchard, for example, He came through at Tottenham, very professional setup, played at England youth level, sort of, you know, he's had a good upbringing in football. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really had a tough time of it when he was a young'un. So when he comes to Sunderland and he sees these facilities are as good as what I'm used to, it's a big sell. That's like when you're looking at Rotherham and Wigan in our league, they can't offer that to players.
Mm-hmm.
Sunderland have such a big advantage when it comes to what we can actually offer. And Lee Johnson talks about this all the time. He talks about being able to offer a Premier League environment to players where they might not otherwise get one. I mean, even in the Championship, if you look at the Championship, I don't think there'll be many, if any, clubs can really offer what we can. So it's just the whole package at the minute. So we've always had that academy. We've always had that big fan base. We've always had the big stadium. But what we haven't always had is the footballing philosophy to attach to it and to sell to players. And now we have. I think that gives us such a leg up when it comes to transfer windows. I mean, I know it might be looking a bit too far ahead, but when we do get back to the Championship, I think that puts us in an unbelievable position as a football club to recruit the best players available to Championship clubs. So right now, I mean, when you're seeing us link to the likes of Patrick Roberts, for instance, and again, we'll come on that later, but there's a player who's, like Pritchard, never really had a difficult upgrade bringing in football. He came through at Man City where he's probably had everything that he's ever needed. And I think that when you're trying to attract a certain calibre of player, that's the ultimate, really. And it's going to give us such a big advantage over our competitors. And all we've got to do with you in January is keep on banging the same drum, keep winning games, keep playing in the same way with a fearless nature and giving players like Pritchard and Embleton and our own academy players like Dan Neal and players like Sirkin who've came from Tottenham is another player you can point to as somebody who's came from an elite background to Sunderland. Mm-hmm. We can point at these players and go, look, there's your evidence. If you come to Sunderland, that could be you. You could be playing every single week and enjoying your football. And I just think it's brilliant. I think we've got such a big advantage going into this window because of that.
But it's the first window that we've actually had it for a while, isn't it, Gav? Because we've had this reputation of being a basket case of a club. We've always had the facility. Well, for the last 20 years, we've had the facilities, we've had the ground, and we've had the reputation of being an absolute basket case. And hopefully the past, 12, 13 months now, you know, it's less than 12 months since Kirill Louis-Dreyfus took the club over. Speakman and Johnson have been in there for just over a year. But, we're hopefully kind of changing people's perception of what we are as a club, because for far too long we had that reputation. And really, and we saw, didn't we, players were coming because we had nice facilities and had a decent paycheck. And that was kind of the motivation for them coming. And hopefully now there's a lot more pull to come to Sunderland than there ever was for the last... Well, since probably Peter Reid was manager.
The other factor we have to think about as well for the future is retention, because obviously over the Christmas period, with the games being on Sky and the attention that the Carabao Cup quarterfinal got in particular, Dan Neal's performance was picked out by the pundits, by a lot of people who maybe hadn't seen us play in League One this season, were exposed to the new Sunderland for the first time, and obviously Dan Neal is right at the centre of that kind of revolution. Keeping hold of players like Dan Neal, do you think the setup at the academy is going to be what keeps him, the football and philosophy, Gav, or is it just his loyalty to the club? And if, you know, an offer does come in, what level do you think that offer is going to have to be if it is to prize him away from his boyhood club?
Yeah, I've done a bit of thinking on this recently, and I think that this might not go down well. But I just think that one thing we probably have to get used to with this sort of the way things are now with the club is that players are going to leave. They are, because that's the only way you become self-sustaining. It's the only way you redevelop. Now, whether it's the right time to sell Daniel is a totally different question. Clearly, he's only sort of partway into his journey as a footballer this season. He's played pretty much every game since pre-season started. You can see that he's improved massively as a result. So clubs are going to be looking at him and thinking, I want a bit of that. Now, it's whether clubs can make an offer that is tempting enough to let him go. Now, say, for instance, I don't know, a Burnley came in. We could be playing them next season. Do you really want to go there?
Mm-hmm.
They can't match us for fan base, for stadium size, for academy facilities, training facilities. They can't. You know, Burnley are a Premier League club in name, but once they drop out of that, they're one of many in the Championship. So they're the one that's been named. That's the only reason I bring them up. But say it's a big club in the Premier League, it's difficult. But obviously the financial package has got to be good. It's difficult. I don't ever want to see him leave Sunderland. I wish he would stay here for as long as possible and grow with us. But if a good offer comes in, I'm already sort of priming myself for offers coming in for our better players over the next year or so in the club considering it. And I think if you look at, say, Brentford, they've done a very good job of doing this. They've done well with selling players and then sort of bringing in the next one to sort of replace and develop again. And I think that's where we're going to be heading. Whether that means it's a good idea to sell Dan Neil, I don't know. I think it's just naturally he's going to receive a lot of attention at the minute because he's clearly very good. And the more he plays and the more he keeps scoring goals and grabbing assists and probably playing for England at youth level, we're going to get even better clubs coming in for more attention. And I think ultimately whatever happens has got to be right for the club and right for the player, not right for the buying club. So, you know, if a Chelsea or a Liverpool or a Man City come in, can we really stand in his way? It's tough, isn't it? But we'll come to that when it happens. I think at the minute, if I'm Dan Neil and I'm his family and the people advising him, I'm telling them to stick with Son until the end of the season anyways, because them offers will still be there in the summer if he carries on the way that he's going. And I think, to be honest, he's loving it. You can see it. He absolutely loves playing for Sunderland. It's his club. But, you know, if it's a situation like we had with Jordan Henderson where it's a Liverpool comes in or Pickford with an Everton who were a decent club at the time, it is going to be tough to stand in their way. So, yeah, I think we've just got to play it by ear. But ultimately, yeah, it's got to work in the club's favour. Otherwise, I wouldn't even consider it. Like I say, Burnley, no disrespect, they've been a regular fixture in the Premier League for God knows how many years now. But like I say, we could be playing them next season in the Championship. And in the Championship, we are a bigger club, a better sell to players. We're probably going to have, you know, a better chance of progressing up the leagues than they will. I don't think that's an appealing move to anybody. So let's just hope with Dan Neil we can retain him until the summer and worry about it then.
Because this was the model that was sold, isn't it? That, you know, we'll bring players through, we'll sell them on, we'll reinvest, we'll do it incrementally, and it doesn't matter about one particular player. Or is Neil that kind of player where he has to be the linchpin as a local lad, has to be the linchpin who you keep and who drives the whole development of the club?
I think the negative that would come with any transfer of Dan Neil, unless it was for probably as much or more than we sold Pickford or Henderson for, the negative atmosphere that would create and put a downer on everybody. And I think that's going to be something that people weigh up as well. I think it's completely one thing, you know, buying somebody from, you know, the Irish leagues or somebody like Roberts, if we get him on a permanent deal where you bring him in on a free or a low fee, develop him for 2 or 3 years and sell him on. I think to sell Dan Neil, who's been talked about for a few years, coming up through the youth team, who's finally got a chance, who's 19-year-old, he's not 22, 23, 24, he's 19-year-old, he's 6 months into his professional career. I think to sell him now, you know, as you lads have said, like 3 million from Burnley isn't any sort of an offer that you'd remotely consider. He brings so much more to the club than just what he's doing on the football field right now. And he's so much more valuable to the club in the longer term than he is right now. The other interesting aspect to it is, as a player for Dan Neil, where is he actually going to be best off developing? You know, we've had the perfect example with Broadhead coming here. Broadhead's 23, 24-year-old. You know, he's made a handful of professional appearances. He's been lucky to sit on the bench in the Premier League. Now, we've seen the quality of Broadhead in our team this season. And you couldn't say right now Dan Neil is, you know, he's probably a similar level to Broadhead in terms of talent. Dan Neil will be looking at Broadhead going, shit, he's 4 years older than me and he can't get a kick in the Premier League. So am I better off here playing 50, 75, 125, 150 games over the next 2 or 3 seasons, playing in front of 30,000 people? Am I going to be better off as a 22-year-old having that experience or sitting on the bench and getting a few loan moves out over the next 2 years? So I think there's all those aspects to consider as well. And I think, you know, the move would have to be incredibly tempting for Dan Neil as a regular first-team football player because, he risks being, you know, stagnant for 2 or 3 seasons.
Who in the Premier League could, say, even next season, offer him regular game time? Because I'm thinking about it. Possibly, there are clubs who give young players chances, though. I mean, Southampton do. Could see that, maybe. But
in terms of regular football, Gav, even if he went to Southampton, for example, who give young players a chance, he might get 10 games.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to get that level of football. So, again, you look at career progression. I've got a vested interest in this argument, but you kind of think that he's far better off playing the next 2.5 years as a first team regular, hopefully in the championship for part of that. And then you go on. Now, you know, you look at somebody like Callum Doyle. You saw him score on Thursday night, whenever it was, first goal, playing regular football. How is he going to go next season if he goes back to Man City playing the under-23s? It's not going to be a patch on what he's experienced this season. So you've got all of this to consider as well. And I think it would have to be a hell of a move for Dan Neil to be tempted by it.
The other side of it is Barley Mumba's the same age as Dan Neil. He left. I mean, it might have been pushed out the club. I don't really know. But Barley Mumba's played, if these figures are correct, he's played 19 professional games and 10 of them were at Sunderland.
Yeah.
Same age as Dan Neil. You know, warming the bench. All right, he's in the Premier League with Norwich, but he's not getting a game. He's played one game in the league this season. And I think that was if I remember rightly, that was right at the start of the season against Man City where he got absolutely tortured playing fullback, which is, you know, nothing on the kid. He needs experience, Mumba does.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good sort of thing to point to, really. Barley Mumba, same age, came through at the same time. He's went to a club who Norwich, to be fair, give kids chances, and the opportunities just haven't been there for Mumba. It's not to say there wouldn't be for Neil, but what it does show you is sometimes the grass isn't always greener, and maybe, like you've just said, Martin, maybe for his benefit, he's better off playing 100, 150 games for Sunderland before a better offer comes along eventually. And I wouldn't begrudge him it. Like I've got absolutely no qualms about letting Dan Neil leave if it's to go to a club where he's going to play regularly at the top end of the game, and we can't offer that at the time. So if we're like middling in the Championship, or God forbid, still in League One, and there is a Premier League club, like what happened with Henderson and Pickford, where they've gone there and they've played regularly, you can't begrudge them that, because it's a much bigger offer.
But if you went to Coventry, right, for $2.5 million this transfer window, which hasn't been rumoured, I've just completely made that up off the top of my head, but that would fit in with the model, right? That would fit in with bringing players through, selling for a bit of money, reinvesting it. You could make all of those arguments to it, but that would be diabolically bad for us as a club to sell them to a Championship club or whoever it was for that sort of money, because it just doesn't make sense on the footballing level. It might make sense on the business level, but it wouldn't make sense on the football level.
Just coming back to something you were saying before, Martin, I think it's a really interesting point of comparison. You were saying about, obviously, you know, you can get to 23, 24 and haven't played a good amount of games. It does bring us on to one of the rumoured transfers or somebody who was in the stands at the Sheffield Wednesday game, which is Patrick Roberts from Man City or Troy, where he's been on loan. Now, he's a bit like a broadhead in terms of his age and being, you know, hotly tipped, had a couple of loan moves, but really hasn't had that much experience. And he's somebody who we're looking at bringing in from the Premier League, from the top flight, to get that development. So I think that contrast as well might be quite interesting if bringing more players like that, you know, Sirkin, I guess, a bit younger, but a similar kind of stage in his development, possibly.
It's actually a really good comparison with Roberts and Dan Neil, because Roberts started at Fulham.
Yeah.
And had a few games, impressed with Fulham. Man City spent 11 million quid on.
Yeah.
And he's played one game in 4 years. You know, he's on loan at Celtic for 18 months. I had a little bit of a look before at him. Been on loan at Celtic for 18 months, had spells with Middlesbrough and Derby and Girona. He has played over 100 games in his career, so he's had a bit of experience, but that big move at a young age to a good club has led him to be sitting in the stands watching a third-tier club play with the option of a move to them. So it's a really good, you know, comparison in terms of what can happen. Because that career trajectory isn't always up. There's going to be some ups and downs in there, isn't there? But like, to me, as Sunderland now, that would be a cracking sign, wouldn't it, Roberts? He's a player who's got immense potential. And if we can land him on a decent deal, it could be pivotal in our season.
Well, I've got a friend who's a Celtic fan, and I asked him about Roberts, and obviously that's pretty much the biggest chunk of football he's had was at Celtic over that two-year period. And they absolutely loved him there. Thought that they should have signed him. When they tried to sign him, Man City made him a boatload of promises about first-team football, and I think he might have got a new deal out of it. And it was never forthcoming. And you sort of look at it from there, and he's gone from club to club. Picked up, I mean, to be fair, when you look, he's played across a lot of leagues. He's played in the Championship, Scottish Premiership, La Liga, Premier League, back to the Championship. Then he's obviously over in France at the minute. So he's got a lot of experience for a young lad, but what's pretty evident to me is that given he's had loan spells from 2016 to now, consistently, he needs to settle somewhere and he needs to play regular football. And Sunderland right now are a brilliant prospect of a player like that, because like we said earlier, you just point Alex Pritchard, don't you? And you say, look at this guy. He sort of bounced from club to club and struggled to sort of make an impact at his most recent club, which I think it's fair to say that's happened with Roberts. He hasn't played when he's been in France, so he's obviously probably itching to play football, but not getting the opportunity. So you point to somebody like Alex Pritchard, you know, look at him, just look at him. You know, took him a little while to get going, but when we've got him going, he's the best player in the league at the minute. And that's all we've got to do. There's so much evidence there from, you know, we just point at these players and go, look at this guy. Similar type of player as you, creative, you know, played at a high level, you know, went for big money at a young age. Look at him. He's right. He's at Sunderland now. We're playing in League One, but he's the best player in the league. This is the environment we can offer you. We can give you the freedom to express yourself, score goals, create goals. You're going to have to work hard. Don't make no bones about it, but you come here and you work hard, you're going to play lots of football and you're going to succeed. And that is the best possible example we can produce. And to me, that's why a player of that calibre is looking at a move to League One, because there's so much evidence to suggest we can be the best club for him.
I wonder how much influence Lee Johnson's had on that already, because he spent time with Man City and the City group, hasn't he, in terms of working with the coaches and, you know, spending time observing the coaches. We saw him in the stands at St. James's Park a week or so ago with Brian Marwood, didn't we, at the Newcastle game. And obviously, he's done a great job with Callum Doyle so far this season. So I wonder how much of it's Man City going, you know what, for your career right now, that's a great move. That's a great manager to work with, and he'll get you back on track.
Yeah, it could well be. And I think, again, just going back to the earlier point about philosophy, the way that we play, they're playing out from the back, they're having a goalkeeper who can distribute the ball to a player like Doyle who can carry it forward. All these things are what, you know, the top end of the Premier League clubs really want, is what the way that they play. I think it makes us, again, this really attractive offer for young players. Now, talking of young players, Trey Hume, is that how you pronounce his first name?
Correct, Trey. I think, yeah.
Trey Hume from Linfield scored in the last two games for Linfield as a fullback, but it seems to be able to play across the defence and possibly midfield as well. So very much a Johnson kind of player in that sense, can play in lots of different positions. 19-year-old Northern Ireland under-21 international. What do we know about him?
Only thing I really know about him is their fans absolutely love him, and so do the media. The sort of hype around him at the minute as an 18-year-old playing in a pretty poor league, to be fair. So I guess when a good talent does come around, they know it, because there's probably a lot of bad players playing that league, and when there's one that really stands out, you know, they sort of get a lot of hype. But it appears that he is the next big thing waiting to happen out of that league, and we don't do that enough, really. A lot of good players come out of the Irish leagues and the Welsh leagues, you know. A lot of them, 18, 17, 18-year-old, come out and don't ever really tend to end up at Sunderland. I remember we went through a spell, I think when Peter Reid was manager, we had pretty strong ties to Ireland, didn't we? We had a lot of young players come over. I remember James McLean coming from I think it might have been Derry.
Derry City.
Could be wrong.
Yeah.
But he was spotted by Pop Robson years and years ago. But we don't often raid those leagues. We just sort of look elsewhere. And that's where your value is in these smaller leagues, looking at the best young players coming through. Because when you look, like I say, throughout the Championship and in League One, there are a lot of Irish players playing in our leagues, you know, and a lot of them started there. But Hume, from what I gather, he's quick, he's good on the ball, likes to get forward, he works hard, pretty big lad. Just fits the mould by the looks of it. All we can really go on, because there's not a lot of evidence and we don't really know how strong the Northern Irish League is, all we can really go off is the word of fans who watch the game regularly over there, fans of Linfield, journalists, and they're all raving about this kid. So, you know, I imagine we've been looking at him for a while. I imagine we've got scouts out there who have identified him possibly early in the season. Yeah, seems like a sensible bit of business. We definitely need a right back, don't we? We can't deny that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that kind of brings us on to the next part, really, which is right back, tick, you know, that's a definite need. Keep signing them, keep getting injured. Hopefully this lad can stay fit for the rest of the season and he can really kick on. Martin, where else on the pitch you know, I think we've probably asked this before, but where else on the pitch, given where we're at in terms of the squad, the injuries, the long-term injuries, where are we going to have to be looking to improve over this month? Because it's going to be a crucial window, really.
It is. Look, I think striker's the obvious one, isn't it? Obviously, Broadhead's picked up the injury, and we don't know how long he's going to be out for, but whether the club decides to call it quits with his loan and get him back to Everton to free up some space for another loan to come in, or we kind of think, well, he's going to be out for 2.5 months and he's going to be back for the run-in, so we'll keep him around. That obviously depends on the longevity of his injury, but regardless, we're going to need somebody up front over the next 2 months at the very least. So I would be very surprised to not see a striker come in on loan probably quite early in the window. Centre midfield's the other, I think it's kind of the spine of the team. Like centre midfield, if everybody's fit, we've got enough options, but Corey Evans isn't ever going to be always fit. Unfortunately, O9's out for, you know, could be out for the season, could be out for the next 2 or 3 months. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a centre midfield player come in. And, you know, as much as we've extolled the virtues of Dan Neil already on this pod, he's a young lad who's played a hell of a lot of football, probably a lot more football than was ever envisaged him playing this season. So, you know, there's the chance of him burning out. So I would like to see some centre midfield player come in. And then, you know, potentially centre-half. And, you know, I think a lot of this as well kind of depends on who moves out. And there could be some offers coming for players who are out of contract at the end of the season, who the club have no intention of retaining. But, you know, there's 300 grand, 400 grand offer comes in for, I don't know, Tom Flanagan or somebody like that. How do the club weigh that up? Do they kind of go, well, actually, we're not going to give him a new contract. We're going to, and we don't know if he's going to get a new contract off, but just theoretically, not going to give him a new contract. There's 400 grand on the table there. Do we take it? So centre-half, I think, could be one. I think we're kind of well covered in wide areas. If Roberts comes in, the Jacku's really sort of looking to be an effective player. Serkin and Hume are coming back from injury. Gooch has been superb over recent weeks. Bailey Wright, I never knew he could play out wide, but Bailey Wright can play out wide, it seems. So
great crosser of the ball.
Plenty of options.
Great crosser of the ball.
He has surprised me so much how good a football player he is.
Yeah.
He's just a really nice football player. And you would never have seen that centre-half, would you?
No, and again, it's just how players can flourish here, isn't it? I mean, you've gone down the list of positions that I'd wrote down and put a tick against each one. Gav, what are you thinking about in terms of what we need? Is it that kind of, is it four players in those kind of spine positions plus right back?
I think five. I think five would be about right. Right centre half is definitely where we need to recruit, because as Martin just mentioned there, you know, Bailey Wright and Flanagan, I think their deals are coming up soon. But regardless, we need somebody who can offer something a little bit more dynamic. I think we need somebody who's big and strong and physical. At centre half, we just don't really have. They're all nice players on the ball, and you know. But we've seen where we've been exposed this season, and it's been aerially, and we don't really have that option. We're only halfway through the season; anything can happen. So ideally, we need to sign somebody who can offer us that. Right back, obviously, Trey Hume, happy enough with that. And one player you didn't mention there, who was returning soon, as Niall Huggins, who was a right back.
Yeah.
So we've got him coming back. Centre mid, I think this position is important for a number of reasons. One, you can't rely on Corey Evans to stay fit. And the other one being, we just don't have a big physical sort of anchor in midfield, someone who can hold the middle of the pitch for us. We don't have that player. Like I say, I'm pretty impressed with how the centre mids are playing at the minute, but we still don't have a player with those sort of characteristics about them. So I think that's pretty important. We go out and we get somebody who's, you know, it's like a big old lump in the middle of the pitch, really, but somebody who's pretty good on the ball as well. And I know those types of players don't grow on trees, but that's why we have a scouting department to identify what we need. Other than that, Roberts obviously plays off either side. I think he can play as a 10. We definitely need one more player in that position. I know we've got Embleton and Pritchard and Gooch and Diak. We have some good attacking options, but I think one more is not going to hurt. I think everybody probably would have admitted maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago that we needed a left winger in. That hasn't really changed for me. I still think we need somebody. Embleton's sort of ability to stay fit is also in question. He doesn't tend to stay fit for longer than a month at a time. Pritchard, before he came here, was known as a bit of an injury prone player. Not to say that that's going to happen now, but worst case scenario, he gets injured, we're left up shit creek without a paddle. We need somebody else who can play that position. And then a striker, obviously. We definitely need a striker because Broadhead, I know you mentioned before, Martin, about the severity of his injury. I think there was a rumour, wasn't there, that it's not as bad as first Fiat. He's not going to need surgery, but it's looking at about 2 months. Even then, if he gets up to speed, you're looking at sort of the back end of the season before he's back. So we're going to need a striker because, you know, if anything happens to Ross Stewart, we're knackered. And I think, I've got a feeling Aidan O'Brien might leave as well.
I think he will.
Yeah, so regardless of whether we need one or not, we're probably going to lose O'Brien, let him go out somewhere and play football, and then obviously bring in a replacement. Now it's whether we bring in another sort of Stewart type for money who's come from a lower league, who's been identified as somebody who can develop, or we bring in a loan from a Prem team, I don't know. The one thing I would say, though, on the overall subject of transfers, is that people probably need to temper expectations a little bit on how early we'll do our business, because you've only got to look about what's going on at the minute. Teams are struggling from top to bottom in Premier League to EFL to field even 14 players at the minute, mm-hmm. to get teams out for games. And that's going to factor into a lot of this. I don't think players will move that often early in the window, because even the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal and Man City are having to look to their young players to fill their bench out. And ultimately, their interests are more important than ours. So if we're in for a right-back from Arsenal, they need that player on their bench more than they need them to send them to us. So what they'll probably do is wait till the back end of the window to let players go. So I think if we're looking at loans from Prem teams, we're going to struggle to get anybody before the sort of last week or so of the window, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So that leaves you with money being spent, I guess, at the start of the window. So Hume from Linfield, I can see the Robertson deal being done pretty early because he's not getting a game in France. But I actually think there might be a bit of a gap between those two players coming in the next sort of week, hopefully, and the rest of our business. And what I would say to people is you've got to take into consideration all of these things that are going on in football and not get too flustered if sort of 10, 15 days before the end of the window we haven't got everything. Because as the summer showed, just look back to the summer, everybody was up to height with how slow we seemed to do things in the summer. But it wasn't a case of being slow, it was a case of getting the right players in. So let's just remember that, I think, is the message.
But I think the way that we're playing at the minute and the way that the players who are playing out of position are playing at the minute as well, it buys us that time, doesn't it? If we come into this January transfer window on the back of a string of bad results, everybody would be itching to get some new players in like now, wouldn't they? And I think the fact that we're coming in a good position off a strong set of results, and even if a player came in, chances are he'd be on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to walk into that team. So it's bought us a bit of time where we can be a little bit, you know, box maybe a little bit smarter in the transfer window. And the signs that come in are going to be signs for the long term, not just going to be signs for the next 3 or 4 months. They're generally going to be signs for the long term, as we saw last January, as we saw in August. And you will see it again now. And unless there's somebody spectacular comes available who can do a fantastically good job for the rest of the season, and that's it. But I think we're more likely to see players who will do the business over the next 2 or 3 years, or we have a chance of signing them after a loan spell. It's going to be with a long-term view, I think, rather than the short-term view.
Yeah, there's another factor that we have to think about here, as well as we've got two decent footballers out on loan at the minute, and whether we'll be looking to bring back Josh Hawkes and or Jack Diamond, given the fact that they both seem to be having decent seasons, particularly Diamond seems to be, you know, on the score sheet reasonably regular for Harrogate. Do you think, Gav, there's a chance we'll bring those back to make up the numbers, even in the short term, over January? Because we've seen Patterson, for example, going back to Notts County after coming back to Sunderland to maybe potentially fill a gap for even a few weeks. You think there's a little bit of wiggle room there from Johnston in terms of what he does with the players out on loan?
I don't think so, no. Not unless we get some injuries in the wide positions, because sort of Roberts plays the same position as Diamond on the left. So if we do get him early in the window, we're not going to really need Diamond. I think Hawks, does he have a future at Sunderland? So it might be better for him just to stay where he is. But with Diamond, I think it's difficult because, okay, he can play left or right, but at the minute, we're actually pretty strong in those sort of positions. We don't really need anybody. So we could bring him back and he would sit on the bench for the rest of the month, yeah, but I don't know. I think I'm a little bit more at ease with it than I was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. Back then I thought, yeah, we definitely need him back because he's playing well and we need wide players, but then we've sort of seen players come back. We've got Sirkin and Hume coming back as well. Remember, both are getting minutes now off the bench. They're going to be ready probably to start. I would assume from the Wickham game, one of them will start. If we're carrying on with this three at the back system with two wide men, it probably means that we don't really need anybody on the left. So no, I would leave them where they are. If, however, we get 3 weeks into January, a couple of players go down injured in wide positions and we can't get Roberts in, whatever reason that deal's collapsed or whatever, then it's something to consider. And I would be content with it because he's a good player. He's definitely done well where he is. And if he came here, he would contribute because he can play that sort of left wing back role pretty well. So no, at the minute, I think we just leave them where they are.
Martin?
Yeah, look, completely agree. And I think, you know, we've heard Christian Speakman talk about having individual plans for every player and looking at their development as well as the immediate results for the club. Jack Diamond seems to have had a great first half of the season on loan at Harrogate. I think him spending another, 4 or 5 months there, as opposed to coming back to us, sitting on the bench, is the best thing for him. And as Gav said, we're not in any desperate need for wide players at the minute. If he's going to come in and come straight back in the first team for the next 4 or 5 weeks, he'd go, yeah, bring him back in and reassess it at the end of January. But chances are he'd come back and sit on the bench. And even though we have been struggling for numbers on the bench, you saw Benji come on the other night, put a good performance in, score a nice goal. You know, there's no reason why the other players who are on there can't do similar if they're given the chance. So I think unless anything changes in terms of injuries, I don't foresee him being recalled this season.
Great. Well, there's loads of positives there in terms of transfers, potential transfers. And I think it's going to be an interesting month. We've obviously got four fixtures coming up. Wickham, Lincoln, I think, are the first two.
Accrington and then Portsmouth.
Accrington and Portsmouth. So
and then Bolton the round off the month.
So it's a reasonably busy month, even though we haven't got a game this week. What do you think, Martin, will be the a good return from January, expecting to go unbeaten?
Oh look, not necessarily. No, there's two elements to this. I keep banging on about 2 points per game, and I think if you look at January's a chunk. Mm-hmm. We've got five games there. So if we get 10 points in January, we'll still be tracking all right come the end of January. So as I say, we've got Wickham away, which is going to be a hard game. Lincoln at home, Accrington away, Portsmouth at home, Bolton away. I think 10 points out of those five games would be a good return. Now, how they come, you could get a defeat in there somewhere and would still be all right. So I think it's one of those things. We will lose, because of the way that we play, we will lose a game now and again. But I don't think a defeat would be the end of the world. And I think you also look at it in terms of like the top 6, 7, 8 teams, individually, how well are we doing against each of them in terms of taking points off each other? And you never want to be in deficit with one of those teams. So like really, we need to beat Rotherham when they come to the stadium alight. But, we've got, we've already got 3 points off Wickham. So if we can get a draw on Saturday, I'd tell you what, I'd take a draw now. I wouldn't be over the moon with it, but I'd quite happily take a draw because I think that keeps us ticking over and gets the month off to a decent start.
I'd love to beat them on Saturday. I can't stand them, to be honest. I just think anti-football. I know it's the way that Ainsworth's trying to get results out of his squad, but they're not my favourite team in the world. Would you be happy with the 10 points, Gav, or do you think we should be a little bit more ambitious than that? Given the kind of form we're in?
Yeah, I think 10 points is probably about right because, like Martin said, 2 points per game, we're sort of tracking that at the minute. I just think, though, the Wickham game, it's in particular that one, just because they're there with us, I think we need to win it. I mean, a draw wouldn't be the end of the world by any means. I'm not saying it would be, but I think if we can win that game, possibly go top of the league again, because that's also another thing, psychologically being top of the division and letting everybody else chase us as opposed to the other way around. That's a big thing. Lincoln and Accrington, we should be winning both of those games in my view. The toughest game of the month for me is Portsmouth. I think they're in decent form. If you look at them over sort of the last 15 games. I think they're one of the most informed teams in the league. They're going to be tough, even though it's at the Stadium of Light. So I think if you sort of isolate Wickham and Portsmouth out from the rest, we've got to win the other three, definitely, which would be 9 points from those games. That then leaves us with the opportunity for a bit of leeway either side. But I just think psychologically you've got to maybe beat Wickham. And if we don't beat Portsmouth, it ain't the end of the world. But the important thing is we just take one game, and it's such a cliche, but we take one game at a time. We keep playing the way we are at the minute and we'll be fine. I can't see anybody living with us the way we're playing at the minute. Wickham are just, we know exactly what to expect from them, particularly in their own backyard. But we've shown in recent weeks, particularly, there's more aggression to us than we maybe realised. We're a lot more aggressive. We're winning the second balls. We're getting stuck in when we haven't got it. And when we do have it, teams can't live with the way that we play. And Wickham, for all that they have got going for them, they're a big, physical, strong outfit. We'll play them off the park if they let us have the ball. So I'm pretty confident, actually, and I think that would be a good start. If we can get a three-pointer out of that, the rest of the month will play out just as expected, in my view.
Yeah. The game against Wickham on Saturday relies on the referee being up to scratch. And it does, doesn't it? Because if the ref, we saw it, you know, in a number of games this season, like the Charlton at home game stands out like a sore thumb, doesn't it? Where the referee lets a team get away with things that are, you know, probably should be penalised. And it just takes a step up, and all of a sudden it turns into a battle and not a football match. And, you know, we saw it at the Wickham at home game where the lad gave 09 a right hook, didn't he? And didn't get spotted, and the referee missed it. So, like, the referee's got to be, I don't know who the ref is on. I'll have a look. It's Mr. A. Clown. Oh, shit. probably will be, won't it? Given the standard that we've seen this season. But the referee needs to be on it, because if we don't get a strong referee, it could descend. But if we do get a good referee, it allows us to play our football, then it's a completely different proposition.
Yeah, it's a funny one, Wickham, isn't it? It's a small pitch from my memory. It's a tight ground. They play.
It's their house,
awful,
isn't it?
Awful football. Yeah, it's their house. Well, it is, you know, it's not much bigger than a shed, you know. But it's a funny place to go. And I really hope, you know, whatever team we put out, whatever, you know, the way the game goes and however the refs being, that we do try and play them off the park, because we did in August.
And we did last season when Phil Partington was manager, you know. We, on our own patch, we're very good against them, but
yeah,
obviously when you get down there, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. So, there's plenty to look forward to this month. Loads coming up on the Roker Report website, and loads of interesting kind of looks forward to the rest of this month and the rest of this year as well. So I'd like to wish all of our listeners a Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us this morning, Martin.
My pleasure, thank you very much.
And cheers, Gav, for your time.
Tara. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.